In the last few years, the state of Israel has actively sought to build alliances with the lesbian, gay, bi, trans communities in Western countries. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported last year that the foreign ministry was recruiting international queers to support its campaign for harsh measures against Iran. The Israeli government recently co-sponsored a special gay-themed cultural festival in San Francisco called Out in Israel. For some queer activists, this proves Israel's claim that it's the only democracy in the Middle East. But others disagree. Joining me now are three women who are working to oppose what they call Israeli efforts to pinkwash violations of Palestinian human rights. Here in the studio is Carla Schick, a member of Queers Undermining Israeli Terrorism, or QUIT, and just for full disclosure, I am also a member of QUIT. Joining us by phone from Palestine is Radir, a member of Aswat, Palestinian Gay Women, and also on the phone is Natalie Corey-Toe of Queers Against Israeli Apartheid in Toronto. Radir, I'm going to start with you. Your group, Aswat, and another queer group in Palestine, Al-Kaus, released a statement during the Out in Israel festival asking international queers to protest those types of events. Why did you write that statement, and what did you hope to accomplish?
First of all, we feel that Israel is pinkwashing its crimes and violation of human rights in Palestine and the occupied Palestinian territories by saying that it's a haven for the LGBT community, including the Palestinian community. And here we have to make it very, very clear that Israel hardly makes a distinction between gay and straight Palestinians. And by violating basic human and civil rights of Palestinians, they're also violating LGBT rights. So we felt that this is our role. For the first time, we felt that Palestinian queers should speak directly to the LGBT community in America and elsewhere in the West to refute the myth of gay-friendly Israel. And we feel that these kind of actions, you know, to issue a press release against that, it will allow groups who refuse to keep a blind eye and a deaf ear to Israel's double standards. And by double standards here, I mean Israel violates human rights every single day. Israel commits war crimes every single day about Palestinians, whether living inside the occupied Palestinian territories or whether living inside Israel.
I'm going to ask some follow-up questions to that in a little bit, but right now I want to turn to Natalie. And Natalie, your group has actually been banned by Toronto Pride in the last few weeks. They voted to not allow your group to march. And that has something to do with your name, Queers Against Israeli Apartheid. So tell us what happened, and also, if you would, tell us why you do use the name Queers Against Israeli Apartheid.
Technically, our group itself has not officially been banned. Instead, the words Israeli Apartheid have been banned from Pride this year. And this has been the result of a massive mobilizing and lobbying campaign by the pro-Israel lobby here in Toronto, but also internationally. So this lobbying campaign has targeted not only the board of directors and staff at Pride Toronto, but also the city of Toronto, and they've even been able to pressure the city into threatening to pull funding for Pride if they continue to allow us to participate in the parade. Really, the way to understand the attacks on using the words Israeli apartheid is to understand the rebrand or the Brand Israel campaign, which has basically been launched as a way to improve Israel's international image and garner greater support within the international community. So in Canada, we have been seeing over the last 2 years extreme attacks against any group or individual who has been critical of the state of Israel and its state's policies. So in Canada, we've seen cuts to funding from the Canadian Arab Federation. We've seen attacks on individuals, such as artists in the city of Toronto, like Rena Katz, who have had funding pulled from their art programs simply because their politics align with Palestine solidarity work. And then most disturbingly is we've seen the development of a Canadian parliamentary coalition to combat anti-Semitism, which has been a fancy name that has been given to a group of politicians who are participating in the Israel lobby and are trying to equate any criticism of the state of Israel as a form of anti-Semitism and as a new form of hatred and hate speech. So really, I think one of the reasons why Queers Against Israeli Apartheid chose to use the words Israeli Apartheid in our name was because we wanted to respond to the demonization of criticism of the state of Israel within Canada, and especially within Toronto, which has been a major target for the Brand Israel campaign. And the Toronto queer community in particular has been a target of this. So we've seen increases in advertising, increases in Israeli cultural funding and support for gay pride festivals. We've seen tourism ads all throughout the village and in gay press in Toronto.
Your campaign has focused a fair amount on the issue of censorship. I'm not so sure that I'm against all censorship in terms of if there were a group that were vehemently anti-immigrant, you know, that wanted to march with signs mm-hmm. about illegal immigrants go home, I would think that those people should be excluded. So do you agree with that? And if so, how do you feel that what you're saying is different?
You know, I think that the question of censorship and freedom of speech has been the most publicly taken up concept in this whole issue. Indeed, many people within the queer community only started to pay attention to this issue the second it became an issue of censorship of language. So I think that to a certain extent, all the attention that censorship and freedom of speech has gotten is more to do with the kinds of, you know, liberal narratives and narratives and within, I think, actually queer histories around censorship against banning books or refusing books to be crossed over to the border because of what is considered to be like lewd content or inappropriate content or overly sexualized content. You know, bathhouse raids had to do with, in some ways, a kind of relationship of censorship to public sex. The question of freedom of speech and censorship is an important one to pay attention to in this case because the claim is that the words Israeli apartheid constitute hate speech. And what we've seen is, in fact, that there has been absolutely zero, you know, legal investigation into whether this constitutes hate speech. And in fact, to the contrary, we've had intellectuals and leaders over and over again say that there's nothing to suggest or no evidence to suggest that calling Israel an apartheid state is a form of hate speech. And instead, what we get are these kind of political rhetorics that suggest that people feel uncomfortable because they identify strongly with Israel.
Don't you think that it's kind of provocative or unfair to equate Israeli policies with apartheid South Africa?
Really, the word apartheid describes a state that uses that separates its population and creates separations both physically and culturally, and mobilizes this kind of distinction and difference along lines of race. So Queers Against Israeli Apartheid isn't the first group to call Israel an apartheid state. And in fact, we see that leaders of anti-apartheid movements from South Africa have themselves looked at the situation in Israel and the treatment of Palestinians and the occupation of Palestine and have themselves said that Israel is indeed an apartheid state. I think even Israeli politicians have at many moments described the construction of the separation wall as a kind of apartheid moment.
Kate, if I may, I say something about that as well? As a Palestinian who lives inside Israel, having an Israeli identity and an Israeli passport, and you know, practicing some of the rights that, you know, the Israeli government is actually allowing me to practice, like the right to vote and the right to gain, you know, access to education. And when I think about your question, is it really fair to compare that? And I really, you know, sometimes I have an identity crisis in terms of I was born in Israel, but I'm not, you know, that's my Palestinian nationality. And I think what really made it easier for me to decide whether I'm more Israeli or Palestinian was the first intifada and even more the apartheid wall. You have to see the apartheid wall and how it separates not just towns and villages, but it separates families from each other. It prevents kids from going to school. And I think there is absolutely no exaggeration whatsoever, not to mention Israel's, you know, severe violation of human rights and policies of discrimination, whether in the occupied Palestinian territories or inside Israel.
So, Carla, your group and my group hasn't actually come into under that particular kind of fire for the name. So do you think that that means that the Israeli government and the people here that support it agree that Israel is in fact a terrorist state?
Not really. I think that they hear the name "quit," and a lot of times they see it as Queers for Palestine. When they say that they don't want to brand Israel as apartheid, we have to remember that what we're fighting against is Brand Israel, which is a marketing ploy to make it seem like everything is fine in Israel and that queer people should be invited and come to Israel because there's democracy and freedom in Israel. So our job, I think, as activists, is to really change the terms of the discussion and really present a reality to the public of what is going on in Israel and what is going on for Palestinians in occupied Palestine. And QUIT has been involved in trying to get Frameline, the organization that sponsors the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Film Festival in San Francisco, to not accept money from the Israeli consulate. And this is the first time in 3 years that Frameline is accepting that money. I think it's very similar to what's going on in Toronto, because the think tank that wants to sort of legitimize Israel is making sure that they put their money into places that will make it seem that Israel is the democracy, Palestine is not. Going back to the apartheid wall, I think this is very much a point of discussion for us, because the reality of the apartheid wall is not only the psychological humiliation that comes with apartheid, but it's also a land grab. It's a way eventually to say that there will not be a state for Palestinians. There will not be a viable civil and social and political state. We are being censored by our own community. So, for instance, in Toronto, they're not allowing the use of the word Israeli apartheid, when we know very well that most of us got into the struggle for queer rights, we got into the struggle because we believe that it was part of the whole struggle for all people's rights.
So are you saying that it's not important, or that Israel shouldn't be praised for having pro-gay policies? Like, I think it's very liberal in terms of queer people being able to adopt children, being able to have job protection, being able to have their marriages recognized if they take place outside of the country. Khadir?
Well, that's exactly where the double standards fit in. What about the 3 million Palestinians living in the occupied Palestinian territories? What about the 1.5 million Palestinians living inside Israel? I think here it's very important to talk about two things. First of all, the multiple forms of oppression. I lived in Tel Aviv 10 years ago. While there were the Israeli community and my Jewish friends would accept me as gay, the Israeli community would very much exclude me and reject me for being Palestinian. And this is also true today. Last year, when a masked gunman raided an LGBT center in Tel Aviv, a youth center, killing two and wounding a dozen, Aswat was the first one to start co-organizing protests of solidarity against all forms of hate crimes, including hate crimes committed against gay people. And we marched into the main rally in Tel Aviv with senior government officials and thousands and hundreds of thousands of Israelis. We were denied access to the stage because, the Israeli LGBT community who organized this massive event said that the Israeli society is not yet ready for a Palestinian LGBT on their stage.
And just to clarify, that shooting was committed by a Jewish Israeli, is that right?
Definitely. And I think they missed a great opportunity to just send a very clear message. First of all, that all LGBT groups around the world are united in solidarity and against homophobia. And they also missed another chance to send another message that as LGBTs, we're against all forms of hate crimes, whether they're committed against Palestinians, queer, or anybody else. So I'm saying that the Israeli society is not inclusive. As a minority group, an indigenous minority group living inside Israel or under the Israeli occupation, struggling for basic human and civil rights, putting the LGBT rights is not even a priority for Palestinians who are struggling for survival every single day. Because the Israeli society is not inclusive of Palestinians, the Palestinian, despite the gay-friendly laws in the Israeli law, because, the Palestinian society also has, unspoken policies and norms and traditions that doesn't really accept, all these rights and freedoms. So it's an even more complicated struggle for us. And especially as women in an extremely conservative and patriarchal society, women in Israel in general are discriminated against. So I think that it's even making the LGBT struggle much more complicated for us because of the political situation and because of violation of human rights. So I think awarding Israel a medal for being, gay friendly to perhaps 70 or 80% of the population, while, severely violating the human rights of the rest of the citizens and occupying 3 million Palestinians, is not exactly something we want to support.
This is Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Carla Schick of Queers Undermining Israeli Terrorism in San Francisco, Natalie Corey Toe of Queers Against Israeli Apartheid in Toronto, and Radir of Aswat Palestinian Gay Women in Palestine. And we're talking about the Israeli government's efforts to promote itself as the only gay-friendly country in the Middle East.
One of the points of Brand Israel is to present Israel as the country that offers freedom, and it's a westernized modern society like the U.S. What happens in this country, and it's part of the propaganda, is that what is coming through the mainstream media, to including LGBT people, is that the Palestinians are other. And what that allows people to do is then support Israel without thinking about it, without being conscious of what the actions are, without understanding what the complete militarization of the society has done to Palestinians in terms of war crimes, in terms of the siege of Gaza. And so that it allows LGBT people here to ignore all of that while thinking of the Palestinians as not like them. And so I think that in that sense, the Brand Israel campaign has been successful in presenting their propaganda. So then again, what do we as activists do? We need to have a counter marketing ploy in some ways and somehow present the position of what's really happening and have people in this country understand how deadly the occupation has been to allow that narrative to come to the mainstream.
Just the other day, the Pride Parade of the city of Madrid in Spain disinvited a group of Israeli activists from Tel Aviv. The Madrid activists who made this decision said that they felt it was inappropriate to invite Israelis to celebrate with them, given that the leadership of the city of Tel Aviv had not made any statements condemning the attack on the flotilla. And one of the activists from Tel Aviv who had planned to participate said that this decision was wrong because he alleged that many gay people from other Arab countries are living secretly in Israel in order to be free and because they would be killed in their own countries. Radir, can you respond to that?
Well, I personally know of many cases of Palestinians from Gaza Strip on the West Bank who've been targeted by their own communities. Again, we're talking about a very conservative and somehow religious community. You know, seeking a place or a safe place in Tel Aviv is not exactly what happens. What happens is the Israeli government and the Israeli army tries to make use of these people, politically, and that's, you know, and they feel caught in the middle. You know, they can't go back home because they might be targeted because they're gay, and they can't stay in Israel unless they pay something back to the military and betray their families or their friends. And that's one of the main reasons that Aswat was established and Al-Qaws was established, to create a safe space that can be inclusive, that you don't have to compromise, you don't have to compensate one of your identities for the sake of the other. So much work needs to be done within the Palestinian community itself, and even more work should be done on the, you know, on the international level, to talk to the international community directly, because there's so much the international community can do in terms of pressuring Israel and telling Israel that we cannot accept your double standards. For people who enjoy rights, they can't see the other side. I think that the mass majority of the Israeli people are very much blinded. There's a huge consensus over the Israeli policies, and that's why you don't see massive demonstrations on the streets. Even after the flotilla attack, you don't see people protesting. You know, the vast majority of the public are supporting the policies of the Israeli government, and that's very problematic.
Well, Carla, that kind of brings me to my next question, which is that some Israeli queer activists criticized the decision by Madrid Pride to exclude this group of activists because they said these people were not being invited as official representatives of the Israeli government. They were just being invited as individuals. So how does QUIT decide who is a legitimate target, and how did you decide who to target in terms of your campaign around the LGBT Film Festival?
We're not really asking people not to go to the films. We're saying that we don't want to accept support from the Israeli government for our cultural events. But I think it's also important to make a legitimate distinction between people who are very critical, who stand up and have the courage to be critical of their government, and people who don't. And if we don't make those distinctions, then why should we make it even within this country? We do it in the U.S. We do it with people who are in the U.S. and the leaders in the U.S. We make a distinction between people in the U.S. who criticize our government's actions when they're wrong and people who don't. And I think that it's a legitimate concern that the LGBT people in Israel did not take a strong stand against the attack on the peace flotillas. So with Frameline, we're really asking that people put some pressure on Frameline not to accept Israeli government money. Boycott and divestment is a legitimate nonviolent means to put pressure on a country to change. And we have learned some things from the movement against apartheid in South Africa. We learned that it is successful when there's a successful boycott divestment movement. And we really want to change the terms of the discussions to talk about Palestinian human rights, not about the rights of Israel. We want to change the terms of the discussion so that people begin to understand that the Palestinians have been totally denied self-determination and that it's the government that is doing that. It's not some invisible hand behind the scene.
And Radir, the Israeli government is clearly very worried about this movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, which is known as the global BDS mm-hmm. movement. And they've mm-hmm. just recently introduced a new law in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, which, if it's passed, will criminalize Israelis talking about BDS. Are you in Aswat worried about how that might affect your work in terms of the international community?
Absolutely. At the same time, now we know the whole cultural and academic boycott does have an effect. The Knesset members are already concerned about that, and they want to pass a law against it. You know, the last thing Israel wants to do is target, you know, Palestinian LGBT people. If we are organizing any actions, it has to be high-profile actions, so Israel will not, appear as suppressing Palestinian LGBT activists. It can be quite useful also to the BDS movement and to us to see the emerging independence or autonomy of the Palestinian LGBT movement right now. And I think that the international community can do a lot, the LGBT international community, to support the rights of Palestinian LGBTs and our struggle for freedom, you know, both the national struggle. And, you know, I just want to mention the Unison, which is one of the largest unions in the UK, is a leading organization that, you know, very often links between the LGBT issue and the BDS movement, as in, you know, a lot of cooperations with them, and they pass motions, and this increases the activism of their members. And I think it's a very good example that actually portrays, and obviously I'm sure there are numerous organizations in the States as well and in Canada that are, you know, recognizing the potential of the LGBT community, especially that Israel highlights, the gay-friendly haven for in Israel. So I think that the growing interest within the LGBT, the international LGBT community, with the BDS movement, can be very, very, very effective in promoting the rights of Palestinians in general and Palestinian LGBTs in particular.
Natalie, I know you've been getting a lot of support from the Toronto queer community. I saw on your website that a number of grand marshals and honored guests have declined to participate in Pride because of your exclusion, or the exclusion of your use of the word apartheid, which appears in your name. So what are your plans in terms of the Pride parade?
Well, our plans are, I think, twofold. The first is that we're building relationships of solidarity with other groups that regularly march in the Pride Parade, and we're asking them to, you know, if they support the work we're doing, then they support our right to participate in the Pride Parade, that they carry our message, that they share and carry the words of solidarity with us. So we've applied to the Pride Parade to march, but we have yet to hear a rejection from them. So until we get to the point where we are formally rejected, we're planning as though we get to march in the parade. And, you know, there's a possibility that the ban might be lifted or it won't be enacted. So I think that one of the main things that we're doing is trying to increase and continue to have the presence of what our message is, which is to be critical of the Israeli state's use of gay rights to justify its continued occupation and apartheid regimes, and to inform the queer community in Toronto around the way that these tactics influence them and impact them and educate people around Palestinian rights. And then the other thing is we're also trying to hopefully gain more international support and encourage groups outside of Toronto to as well bring the message into the queer communities that they live in. And I think that the work that QUID has been doing this for a long time in San Francisco, for example, and has been a model for queers against Israeli apartheid in Toronto.
And Carla, your group QUID has called for a picket line on Thursday night at the opening of the LGBT Film Festival in San Francisco. Can you talk about what's going to happen there?
We would like people not to go to the opening night, but we also understand that people have tickets. We are going to make it very uncomfortable so that people become very aware of the issues of Palestinians. And a lot of times I think we get criticized for that in general, but I always want to say to people, well, your life is uncomfortable for one moment. The Palestinians' lives are more than uncomfortable. They are unlivable. So there will be a picket of us with information, and we're asking people to write in comment cards to Friendline to ask them not to accept money from the Israeli government any longer.
And why did you choose to target the opening night film? Is that an Israeli film?
No, it is not an Israeli film. It is, I think, a Victorian love story, and it's a big opening fundraiser also for Frameline. So we want to send a message loud and clear to Frameline that this is not acceptable. We cannot have LGBT rights if Palestinians do not have their rights.